the Ulysses, man's greatest achievement. A ship capable of traveling to distant galaxies. But a freak accident leaves the ship helpless. Its AI, damaged, dangerous, plays a deadly game with the two surviving members of the crew. If they indulge the machine's newfound passion for science fiction and fantasy trivia, it will permit limited access to the astrogation matrix and star drive. For astronauts Clive Ashenden and Rob Wickens, the choice is clear. If they ever want to see Earth again, they must define the A to Z of SFF.
A is for America 3000. Movie. Continue.
Now, my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandpa, Bob.
Him again.
I think from now on we'll refer to him as Grand to the power of 10, Pa Rob. Bob, how's that sound?
It sounds a thing of beauty, Rob. I really don't know what you're talking about, but do carry on.
Okay. Well, basically, Grandpa to the power of 10, Bob, always told me there were certain things that you should never be ashamed of enjoying. The music of Nils Lofgren was always one of them. The comic stylings of Eric Larson, and most importantly, anything released by the Canon group of companies.
Anything at all. Okay, right.
But specifically, and the reason I'm so pleased that Cyclomedia has done this, despite the fact he's got obviously got a bit of a Chuck Wagner thing going on.
Automan is back.
Absolutely. America 3000 is a Canon film produced by the mighty Golan and Globus, and it's a fairly extraordinary beast. Would you agree?
It feels like both a product of its time and a really odd little duck.
Or words that rhyme with dark, possibly.
Yeah. Should we briefly sketch in the plot such as it is?
Yeah, there's not much of a plot, really, is there? It is the year 3000. And mankind has faced all kinds of apocalyptic problems, shall we say. And society has basically devolved to the point where... It's kind of a bizarre kind of Stone Age / Mad Max style post-apocalyptic landscape.
Yes, although happily, hairspray and eye makeup seems to have survived the apocalypse.
Boy, howdy, hasn't it, though? I mean, we're in the 80s with this. This movie was released in, what, 84, 85, something like that?
86, I think.
86,
but...
right.
Big hair.
Yeah, we're at peak big hair. At this stage in proceedings, and society is basically split into a kind of sex-based duality, if you like. So the women are in charge and the men are the slave race, effectively.
Yeah, well, it seems that at a certain point in the past, various bits of past knowledge have been lost, either because they've been obliterated in a nuclear holocaust or just through sort of chaos and violence. So it seems the only people that have managed to keep any kind of law or sort of civilization going are certain tribes of women.
Yeah.
And so outside of that, we have basically a load of yahoos, sort of big dirty idiot men children running around trying to grab what food they can. And these tribes of women basically enslave these sort of free roaming men, I guess you would say, and sort of pick them for various slave castes. So they decide whether you are a match, i.e. just sort of working labour, or whether you are or whether they're going to geld you and turn you into a toy if they think you've been a bit of intelligence going on, or whether you're going to be a cedar.
A cedar. Yes. We all know what that means.
Yes, whether you have the seed to propagate the race.
Do you have the need for seed?
Yes, indeed. But into this wasteland we comes our, well, they're sort of dual heroes, aren't they?
Yeah. So you've got the mighty Chuck Wagner playing.
Okay. So yes, we have Chuck Wagner as Corvus. Yes, aka Mr. Voiceover.
Oh God, yeah.
It's got some particularly egregious sort of voiceover in this movie, telling us how the world is working in the year 3000.
Or not, as the case may be.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very, very voiceover heavy. I mean, it feels almost like it's just exposition central, especially in the first 10 minutes when they're just desperately trying.
Well, also the fact that most of the people in the movie, all of the people in the movie speak sort of like their own kind of future speak. So it's almost that Clockwork Orange.
Oh, it's like NADSAT kind of a deal, isn't it?
NADSAT kind of thing. Sort of language is devolved. So, you know, you don't say, have you seen this? You say, do you scan this? You know, so it's all these sort of weird mixture of kind of like slightly sci-fi terms, slightly devolved terms, and then just terms which don't really mean anything, so that they keep having to explain them in voiceover. really unfortunate terms of phrases. But, yeah, it makes it a difficult film to sort of listen to casually, because you're constantly sort of trying to decipher what they're talking about. So we have our two heroes. They sort of form their own male tribe. And then at one point, Chuck lucks into finding a bunker with loads of old tech in, and sort of ends up as the de facto new president of the United States.
Yeah, so he starts calling himself Prezi.
Yeah, and using all the old sort of tech weapons of grenades and fireworks and smoke bombs and, of course, laser guns.
Of course, laser guns. So,
well, or laser gun, because that seems to be all the budget there was for. But, hey, it's all right, because love, it seems, can soothe the savage beast and conquer all.
How true is that?
Conquer all. And of course, we know that is completely true. So that's
absolutely right. Yeah.
It does seem weird though. Although the seeding has survived, apparently kissing is like a bit. It is sort of, you know, that sort of went out at some point. People forgot how to do that. So luckily, Chuck reinvents it, which is good.
Well, I think if anyone is going to reinvent kissing, it's going to be Chuck Wagner.
Yep, he is easily the best actor in this film. In fact, I'm almost tempted to say he's the only actor in this film. But that's a little bit over harsh, but there's some shocking performances in this. It sort of works within the thing, within the general tone, but the female lead is very pretty. She doesn't really come across as the leader she's supposed to be.
No,
I think it's fair to say.
She's a very good bearer of hairspray, and that's about it, really.
It's like she got nominated to be the tiara, which is the nicely named heroine, leader of the female.
Leader of the pack.
Leader of the female pack, yeah. And th- th- there's there's a fair amount of sort of shenanigans going on in this film, but there isn't a lot of plot. There's a lot of sort of intertribal politics and people trying to take over as Tiara. There's Chuck trying to sort of lead his man's liberation movement.
It motors along. I mean, there's lots of fighty-fighty bang-bang.
Well, I would say it motors along after the first 30 minutes. The first 30 minutes, it takes a while and it feels very voiceover heavy and clunky in terms of setting everything up. Because we start off with our two male leads as children and we see how that they run away from the female yoke of oppression, such as it is. It's odd, this film, isn't it? Because it's kind of both weirdly sweet and sort of a bit sleazy and full of like sort of the 80s type sexism in terms of it.
Oh, definitely.
It's the way the race, I really can't remember the races, but the twin sort of sexes are portrayed, you know.
Mm, yeah, it's very much 80s sexual politics going on there, which is a bit, it is what it is, and you kind of have to accept it's of its time. But there's moments where you sort of you do wince more, quite a bit at what's going on.
But I mean, really, things haven't really progressed that much since the sort of, well, we're talking like in terms of. This is a female-led society in the future, and there have been a number of really good sort of almost both utopias and dystopias sort of depicted by very good science fiction authors, haven't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
Whether it's female societies where there literally aren't any men, or whether whether there's a third sex or, whether Ursula Le Guin comes to mind.
Yeah,
what I'm saying is that this is post a lot of that but yet it feels more like something that perhaps would have been, it feels of a piece with like a very early Wonder Woman comic, in terms of sort of depiction of a female tribe.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's trying to be satirical in a way, but it just doesn't really have the intellectual chops to do it.
Yeah, they definitely are trying that with the voiceover, but they don't really quite get there. I mean, there are some nice sort of little visual touches. Like Corey's saddles his horse with the American flag, the sort of the bit where he becomes the prez. It's not a painful film to watch. I did find some of it really dull at the beginning, but it's also sort of so odd that you sort of get away with it. I mean, I think compared to a lot of other canon films I've seen, the action is poor. Mm. There's one sort of main sort of assault by the female tribe on the male tribe with lots of explosions and sort of and some. I guess you would call it an excuse for kung fu being demonstrated.
An excuse for kung fu?
You shouldn't do, but what I mean is it's pretty poor. You know, it's like people standing there waiting to be roundhouse kicked. Am I being overly harsh or?
No, I think it's all fair comment, but I think it's really down to how you're feeling at the time. I mean, I agree with you, it is slow to start. They could have cut the exposition in the front sort of 20 minutes well in half. But I think it's got its own charm, definitely. And I think anything with Chuck Wagner in it is always worth a look anyway, regardless.
Yeah, I think, in this he really does look like he could have stepped out of a... like a spaghetti western, maybe one of the Trinity movies, the way he's sort of depicted in it. I wish it was as funny as one of the Trinity movies. It really wants to be, doesn't it? It thinks it's sort of aiming for humour, but not really getting there.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is rather a shame. I quite like how sweetly romantic it is at the end. It's rather unexpected. But if you're looking for any of the kind of sort of visceral thrills that you'll get in, say, the Mad Max films or even their Italian cycle of knockoffs, then you're not going to find it here because it just doesn't really have that. It's the feel of they've got this script and they've taken a bunch of people into the Californian desert and just put them in some cast offs from the Quest for Fire,
yeah,
and told them to have at it a little bit. It's a shame because I think Chuck Wagner didn't get that many lead filmic roles, and this is not a great vehicle for him. Mm. He does well with what he has, but yeah, this is very much a B movie. Like you say, it's only a bit over 90 minutes, so it's not a massive waste of your time, but really, Cyclomedia is really sort of dragging the bottom of the sort of sci-fi barrel here. I think if we're hitting A is for America 3000, then maybe we should move on to B. How's about Cyclomedia?
Negative. More input required.
Oh, yeah.
What for America 3000?
No. Just more input required. Unlocking systems now.
Greedy, greedy Cyclomedia. Okay, well, that's something, I guess. Let's scoot ourselves out of this little sector and onto the next.
Yeah, Wally seems to be in a fairly good mood. Let's do it. Once. Okay. Right, punch it, Rob.
Okay, and in 3, 2, 1.
The A to Z of SFF was written and performed by Rob Wickings and Clive Ashenden. The show was produced and edited by Rob Wickings at All Hallows Post of Reading, the finest sound available anywhere. Would you like to know more? Go to www.theatozofsff.com. Like us on Facebook as The A to Z of SFF, or follow us on Twitter at The A to Z of SFF.